Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Susanna Constantine, and this is My Wardrobe Malfunction, the podcast where I start talking to a very special guest about clothes and see where it takes us, usually in all sorts of wild and wonderful directions. Welcome to Season 7. If you're new to the party, we have 48 episodes for you to catch up on. And if you're a fan of Great British Dames, and frankly, who isn't, we've already featured 4 of them, 5 if you count Christopher Biggins. Dame Kristen Scott Thomas, Sandra Rhodes, Sheila Hancock and Esther Ranson have all been into My Wardrobe. Which leads me nicely on to today's special guest. She's published more than 100 books, sold more than 40 million copies, been Children's Laureate, won multiple awards and been a hugely important and influential part of the lives of generations of young women. It's Dame Jacqueline Wilson. Her latest book, The Runaway Girls, is out now. So, let's grab the handles, open my wardrobe doors, and find out what's inside. Oh, so today I am in pink.
Very pretty.
of the wonderful Dame Jacqueline Wilson. And I really am honoured to meet you and to be able to talk to you because you've published more than 100 books. You've sold more than, 40 million. And my daughters grew up reading your book. So I feel such a kind of sense of nostalgia because it reminds me of when they were younger girls. And that's always a good thing. So Dame Jacqueline Wilson, welcome to My Wardrobe Malfunction.
I'm absolutely delighted. You're in pink and I'm in blue.
Perfection. We are perfection. So let's get straight in there to your style. Okay. I've always loved how utterly distinctive you are in the way you dress. There's that kind of bohemian flair and always interesting textures and patterns. And I don't think there's anyone else like you in public, which is a huge bloody compliment. And was this something that evolved or has it always been with you?
I think it was possibly a reaction to my childhood, although I did stick out then. But we were not at all posh. I lived in a council estate. My mum's ambition was that I was to be ladylike. Now I ask you, which child actually wants to look ladylike? And so instead of letting me wear just the sort of things that all the other kids wore, we got approximations of what was style. We didn't have enough money for her to buy me a sort of sheepskin jacket. I had a suedette. We didn't have enough money for me to have my clothes just at ordinary times. She was a great person for queuing up in the January sales, particularly to a shop called C&A's that went on forever. And so most of my clothes came for there. And if she couldn't buy clothes, she knitted for me, and it was, I can see, very kind of her. But dear God, she never could fit the sleeves properly. So I always had shoulders long before the 80s, sort of sticking right out like a coat hanger. And naturally, kids tease me. She also gave me a home perm so that my hair just sort of exploded all over the place. So I hated the way I looked. And then as soon as I started earning my own money, what a joy it was to be able to choose my own clothes. And the one thing my mum always had was that it was common to wear jewellery, particularly for little girls. And so guess what? I'm absolutely still reacting to that. I went a bit too far in the 70s and 80s and wore a ring on every finger and looked as if I could fell a child with one blow. I got slightly more restrained in my old age. But as you can see, there's still great big lumpy things here, there and everywhere.
But that's just so interesting about your mother. Do you think she saw you as an extension of her rather than as her daughter?
Unfortunately, yes. And not only is that very disconcerting because we have very different personalities, but also when I was about 15, 16, 17, to save money, often I had to wear her clothes, which was absolutely appalling. I mean, we were roughly the same size, but who wants to go out in her mum's clothes? Well, certainly my daughter never wanted to wear my clothes, and I jolly well don't blame her because, you know, you're an individual and clothes express your personality. Mm. So I was married to a very conventional policeman for quite a long time, and he couldn't bear it when I wore something a little bit different and wore all the jewellery. And he again actually wanted me to look ladylike, but, you know, I wasn't somebody that just wanted to look out of, as if I've, you know, raided Jaegers or something. Mm. So it was a great relief, actually, to be single, to wear my own things. And generally I wore black because I think if you're going to wear a lot of very flamboyant jewellery, you do tend to look like a Christmas tree if you've got too many colours and sparkles going on. But then after a while, you get a bit sick of something. And now I live in the country. I mostly wear jeans and boots because, you know, particularly at the moment, if you set foot in the fields, you know, you are literally knee deep in mud. And I love dressing like this.
Mm. No, I'm completely with you on that. But it's interesting how you went from being under the roof of your parents and then into the arms of a policeman who
yes.
wanted you to look a certain way. Do you think there was a kind of safety in that? Was he a kind of almost like training wheels for you to become the independent woman you are today?
That's a very clever theory. But I had left home at 17. I lived up in Scotland for 2 years in a Church of Scotland girls hostel. I didn't really have a home. And I met up with him, and he was actually a printer then. And I do hope he wouldn't be listening to this because, you know, I don't want to sound
no.
spiteful. But it was basically, he was okay. So I thought, all right. Let's get married, because he seemed keen to do this, which is a disastrous mistake. 19 years old, for goodness sake. But hey, we managed to jog along for quite a long time. And then also I got my beautiful daughter, Emma. But it wasn't really, if I'd ever thought of living with anyone at all, it was sort of with some artist type in a sort of interesting garret or something, not in police flats. There we go.
But when you got away from home, did you sort of go crazy with your clothes? Was it like a huge sartorial rebellion for you?
It was a bit, although again, I didn't have much money. I think I had bought a few things in Kingston, where I live with my parents, when I started to earn a little bit of money. And there was a shop called Neaterwear, which was started by the people that then went on to have Browns, the really posh London shop. And Neaterwear clothes were just magic because they weren't desperately expensive, but they were stylish. And the joy of being able to you know, kit myself out in a couple of knitwear outfits, and I just wore them until they fell to bits. And I felt more me then. It was just fantastic. And then in Scotland, basically, you wore all your clothes at once because it was Dundee. It was even in the summer desperately cold. And so then when we came down south, certainly when I was pregnant and I started to show, I basically had one dress, which I started off thinking, oh, this is okay. It's a smock dress. I quite like smock dresses. It was blue and red tartan. And when you wear the same dress day after day after day, dear God, I cordially hated it. And even after I'd had my lovely daughter and was hopefully getting back to relatively normal, because, again, I didn't have that much money and a policeman's wage was pretty rubbish then. I was trying to write and earning a bit with magazines, but not much. So I had to still wear this terrible dress, but belt it so I looked like a sack of potatoes. So the sheer joy now of being able to wear things that I like and are suitable for my way of life. I do always make sure I'm properly dressed, though. I mean, I am so astonished that so many people now that work at home, particularly men, what are they doing sitting there in a T-shirt and their pants when they have Zoom meetings? I couldn't bear to do that. And I always, even if I'm not going out anywhere or seeing anybody, I have to, you know, have something reasonably okay on and even put a bit of makeup on, and certainly the rings, the bangles, because that's part of me.
Absolutely. I completely identify with you on that. I mean, I don't know if you have two sides to you. So there's the side, so I live in the countryside as well. So there's a side to me when I'm going to be out walking or running with the dogs and not seeing anyone, and I look like a tramp. But I will still always put a bit of makeup on, and there'll be something which is kind of okay. And then there's the other side of me where I know I can pull it out the back. Are there two Jacquelines, do you think, in that way?
There are, and certainly before COVID, it was a delight in the village to go down and wear something quite special, even if I was just going to the local pub, something like that, because it's fun to dress up too. And I have a dear friend who has a vintage clothes shop in the village, and he has loads of sort of 1920s outfits, which are rather nice, or black velvet capes or whatever. And the joy of living in a slightly weird village is that nobody gives a damn what you look like, and there are people vastly more eccentric than me, so it is quite fun to wear something different at times. And I have one or two really kind of formal things that if I'm going anywhere out to a posh or seeing anyone really, really special, then yes, they're stuffed in the wardrobe.
So do you see clothes more as kind of dressing up as opposed to being fashionable?
Yes, I don't really see the point of trying to be fashionable now, because fashion's changed so quickly. And I still skim the fashion pages. I'm still a little bit interested. But things are so, so extreme now. And I did feel quite envious of girls wearing sort of tiny little lacy shorts or mini dresses again, because when that fashion came around first time round, I was pregnant, and you can't wander around like that because it just looks ridiculous. Or I was a young man pushing a pram, and if you push a pram in a mini skirt, you show all your underwear. So I missed out then. And now, I mean, I don't want to sort of have people shake their heads and say, sad old girl, sort of thing. So fashion intrigues me, but I don't really take it seriously. And as long as I've got something quite pretty and loose on, that will do me. I did used to love Ghost and all their outfits, and because you could look kind of relaxed and cool, but they were very pretty and lacy. So that was my look for quite a long time. But now I think I'd look a bit like I don't know, young 18-year-old milkmaidy sort of girl.
Or maybe the Bride of Frankenstein, which is how maybe I would look. But those kind of, you know, a brand like Ghost, for example, what's great about them, I think, is that their pieces are timeless. And I think if yes, you know, wear them with the right thing, we can get away with it at any age.
Well, where I think we're so lucky, well, I'm obviously older than you, Susanna, but my granny, when she was about 45, actually donned old lady clothes deliberately, and she wore really old lady things. And my mother, who did get interested in fashion, but mostly had those flappy trousers and sort of those sort of shoes that are very comfy. I like comfy shoes, but you know, I would more go for the Doc Martin look than the sort of Dr. Scholl's.
How many pairs of Doc Martens? You are a real, you know, you are a bit of a hoarder. You're the Imelda Marcos, I think, of Doc Martens. How many pairs do you have, or is just one favourite pair?
I have my favourite pair at the moment is black boots with sort of those roses embroidered on it, which I really like. I don't wear the really, really butch ones. And then they do some canvas boots, and I got a pink pair of Docs for the summer, and several flowery ones. I would say there are about five circulating around the bottom of my wardrobe.
So do you think there's a part of you today that dresses how you would like to have done when you were living with your parents?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, sometimes when children write to me and they're a bit fed up, and they might say that their parents are strict, and how do I know? They might just have been told off for doing something really naughty. But I generally say, but the wonderful thing is you will grow up. And then you can actually choose what you want to do, what you want to wear, how you want to live your life. And I think that's the best thing ever. I mean, so many people my age look back upon their childhood and say, oh, you know, it was a golden time and everything. But nope, I like it just now.
Mm. So because your father, when you talk about your childhood, you know, you had, you know, I read that you had a pretty... You didn't have it easy, and your father was a depressive, which is actually like my mother, who was severely manic depressive. And that must have been very tough for you.
You never knew what mood he was going to be in. And then he did, sometimes for something, I still don't know what it was, he would flare out and shout. But then he would be a sulker. And I think that was the worst thing. You could go for days and days, and it was as if you didn't exist. He just wouldn't look at you. And it was horrible. So it was a kind of a weird upbringing. I think if my parents had married other people, they'd have probably, you know, been much more normal. But in those long ago days, you kind of stuck it out, because my mum did think about leaving my dad lots of times, but she didn't quite know how on earth she was going to earn enough to find a place to live or whatever. And then there was the problem of me too. And, you know, it was difficult. And they both had affairs too, which... I wasn't supposed to know about, but eventually did. And at my dad's funeral, they were technically still married, but not one but two lady friends came along as well, which was bizarre. And then at one time with my mother, when my father was ill, and she was down as the next of kin for the hospital, but also her gentleman friend was in another ward, and she was next of kin to him.
No, really?
It It is a ridiculous situation. So I was determined when I got married, even though it was clear we weren't really compatible, to stick it out as long as possible, because I kind of felt that's what you should do. But I've been much happier since I've not been married to my husband. So, and I'm sure he has too. He's married again.
But it's, I mean, how did you feel when you found out about the affairs? Did you feel, well, I'm glad they found some happiness?
I was relieved about my father, because I thought it was just my mother. And so I felt, poor thing, he's just mouldering away and sad, even though he was a scary dad too. But in actual fact, you know, he was having a happy time too. So it was a very strange childhood, but I don't think I was particularly shocked by that. It was just, I wanted everybody to live peacefully and for there not to be any shouting. And it was always on high days and holidays, quite literally, Christmas and the summer holiday, there were always the big rows, because I suppose they hoped it would all work out each time, and it never did.
Mm. Did you notice when your mother, looking back, if you do indeed know when she was having her affairs, did you notice or remember a change in her appearance? Did she dress up more or a little bit more?
She did dress up more. Mm. Yes, yes. And yes, she was an extraordinary woman. She carried on having an affairs into, well, certainly when she was my age, she was having affairs, which was quite extraordinary.
Oh, my goodness. She sounds like a very complex woman.
She was. Mm. And very strange. But perhaps if I hadn't had such strange parents, I wouldn't be writing the sort of books I do now about kids who don't have a conventional mum and dad who are always there for them. So you could say, I sound like Pollyanna, was advantageous.
I completely identify with that, because, you know, I'm like you with my mother, who never, you know, she was wonderful and very loving and very warm, but her illness was in control of her rather than the other way around. But I lost myself in books and animals, and I wish your books had been around when I was, you know, a young girl, because I would have found great comfort in them. But yeah, I disappear into books. I completely identify with that.
I mean, they were my lifeline too. And I wonder now with children. I mean, I get letters and emails saying, you know, a particular book has helped a child, and that's absolutely wonderful. I know that an awful lot of children just aren't into reading, and yet I don't think you get the kind of emotional comfort if you're just looking at little bits and pieces on YouTube or whatever, because you can literally go into a different world or become a different person when you're reading a book. Are you still a great reader now?
I never don't have a book in my hand. I'm always reading, and I didn't go to university, and managed to sort of vaguely do some A-levels. So like you, because you left at school at 16, didn't
yes.
you? And I didn't go to university, but I write, and I've written two novels, and I'm working on my third. So my university training to write was from reading. That's how I learned to write.
Me too, absolutely. And I find so many people say, how did you get into writing? And I mean, basically, you've just got to start writing and teach yourself in a way how to do it.
Mm, absolutely. And with your characters, I mean, how much thought and time do you put into how they're going to appear and what they're wearing? And if, let's say, it's set in a Victorian era, how much research do you do around that?
Victorian era, it's fine, because basically it stays the same. If I'm specific about what a 10-year-old child is wearing, say, now, and if with any luck that book stays in print, say, for 5 years or even 10 years, then it's all going to be so different. Mm. And even some of the sort of catchphrases or the things that people talk about change slightly. And I would like to be quite current. With Victorian times, that's wonderful. And I don't, when I'm researching for a Victorian book, I don't read social history that much. I might check some facts. I like to read books of the right time. With the latest book, The Runaway Girls, mm-hmm. I read some Dickens. I've got lots of children's books, very moralistic, set in that time. So it gives you a feel. I don't copy any element in the books, but it helps you see the way people express things and things that they were concerned about and the extraordinary situation of children, particularly rich children, shut up at home with governess, certainly if they were girls. Poor children, frequently on the streets, left to fend for themselves. I mean, it was so extreme.
So extreme.
So yeah. It's a treat for me to write Victorian books. And also, if I'm writing a contemporary book now, it's a bit of a nightmare because I don't follow many social media things. It's so hard just to manage to stay convincing. And, you know, the terrible phrase dad dancing always comes to mind. Like in my books, having the children talk, you know, I don't want them, you know, my reader to raise their eyebrows and say, oh, for goodness sake, poor old thing. Doesn't she know that nobody talks like that now? I mean, I try. I listen to children. I'm interested in children. And I hope 90% of the time it's okay. But it is more of a strain.
Mm. But then when I think back to Tracy Beaker, and in particular the TV series, I mean, she had what looks like quite a tight perm. Was that her natural hair, or did you say that's what she needs to have based on you?
That's a lovely thought. Well, certainly I did end up looking like that a bit. But no, I had always had a theory that Tracy herself was probably mixed race. I'd never really mentioned, as far as I can remember, exactly who Tracy's father was. And when she was stuck in the children's home, because she'd never known her father, she never had sort of felt she wanted him to come. It was her mum she was fixated on. But I also, I believe in having the sort of characters that many different kinds of children can identify with. So I have had some letters from children with parents of different ethnic backgrounds saying, I bet Tracy's dad is a black guy. Mm. And I've always thought, yeah, well done you. But nobody else really thought about that. And it didn't really come into things because we didn't really see Tracy's dad at all. I suppose that's still a possibility. I mean, I've resurrected Tracy and now she's a mum with a daughter of her own. You know, it would be really weird if dad suddenly cropped up. Who can tell?
Who knows? That's all still up here in that brilliant mind of yours.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And so now you going, sticking with hair, you've got the most beautiful kind of silver hair. When did you crop it? How long have you had short hair? Because you're very lucky that it suits you so well.
I feel a bit like a yak at the moment with it because I've been very good and stuck to all the rules. I actually sent for a pair of hairdressing scissors, but I didn't have the courage to attack it, and I certainly didn't let my partner try it either. So basically, it's just gone a bit wild. I always wanted very long hair, had a thing about wanting long hair, but I have got very wavy hair, so it would never go particularly long, never really past my shoulders. So I had it all cut off, I don't know, in my teens, and it's been short ever since. Last year, after lockdown, my hair had grown a bit, and I thought, well, I might have it trimmed but keep it a reasonable length, because before it was really, really quite short, and I thought it was maybe a little bit too punishing for the old face, but I think it's easy to cope with, and in the summer I like to go swimming a lot, so then I can just get out the pool and you know, don't really even have to bother blow drying my hair, and it's easier.
So how did your mum feel when you hacked your hair off?
I don't think she particularly said anything. I mean, she certainly, it wasn't in her character to say, oh, darling, that looks lovely. But I don't think she particularly minded that. She did mind about the sort of clothes I wore and found it deeply embarrassing and was forever ticking me off. But then as she got older and more eccentric and possibly a little bit demented, I'm talking now late 80s, and she died when she was 92.
Wow.
She became addicted to shopping channels. She always said, because I've got no one to talk to, but it wasn't that really. I think she always loved buying things, and she had been an antique dealer and couldn't go and barter for things. And so she applied herself to the shopping channels and bought the most inappropriate things. I don't know whether this was inside all the time, but she bought leopard skin things and the oddest, kind of really tarty clothes. You know, this was the woman that tried to be ladylike. And very rarely wore them, but had them piled up so high on her bed that actually she started to sleep in her chair and was really, really outraged at the idea that I could sort of sift through them and put some of them away so she could sleep on her bed, and wouldn't do it.
Really?
I mean, she was very difficult to control, even in old age when she was quite helpless. She ruled with a rod of iron.
Did she ever, or did either of your parents ever pay you a compliment about how you looked?
No, don't think so. And my mum, with my daughter, she was a reasonable, still an eccentric grandma, but she was very fond of Emma, but really never paid her a compliment either. And Emma, who would make, say, a 3-hour train tube journey to go and see my mother, and always she would be greeted with, "Oh, Emmy, oh, you look dreadful. Why don't you have your fringe cut?" And that she, maybe it just wasn't in her. Who knows? And yet her upbringing, you know, my grandparents seemed baffled by my mother, certainly, but they were a perfectly ordinary couple.
But it sounds like she was someone, either through you or I'm not quite sure how she dressed, but with her leopard print, someone who craved compliments herself.
She did. She very, very much wanted to be a centre of attention all the time. And then as an elderly lady if I was taking her out in her wheelchair, she would start conversations with people and then deliberately say something that she knew would embarrass me, or say something really unkind or nasty to someone, or comment on somebody in a very loud voice. And she knew what she was doing, but she even if it was condemnation, she would prefer that than being ignored.
Extraordinary, isn't it? Was she alive when you met Trish?
Yes,
fell in love
she was.
With Trish. So how?
Yes.
How did that go? How did that little scene play out?
Well, she was so naughty because she'd always had gay friends, and she was a bit scathing about gay women always, but not really prejudiced. And yet, of course, it was, oh, you're shaming me, and oh, what will I do? And people will point at you. She was ridiculous, really. But again, I didn't take it too seriously because she had cordially hated my husband and all my friends. So it was just, I'd given up trying to find anybody that would really please her because they didn't exist.
Was there ever a part of you, or is there, not now, she's passed on, but was there a part of you that was wanting to please her, that was always trying to please her?
Up until I was middle-aged, I did want to please her. And then I think you get to the stage when you think it's not going to happen and you must stop getting worked up about it because she can't change. I can change the way I react. And I was an only child, so obviously I still had to see her. I felt I had a duty towards her. Very luckily, her last about 20 years, I was earning enough money so I could pay other people to take her out or attend to her care or just take her for a car ride or something, which was fine, although she got through them pretty quickly. But I just realised that you can't go on just wanting to please. You've got at some stage to please yourself.
Mm. And how do you think, how would you rate your confidence in how you look, Jacqueline? I mean, it's probably changed throughout the years, but...
I must have some kind of confidence because otherwise I'd choose the sort of clothes that would make me sort of blend into the background. I think I wear the sort of clothes to please myself now, and if I feel, yeah, that looks okay, that's fine. I think I'd be disconcerted if out in the street people say, good God, did you see that? Women were swearing. I mean, I would hope I would rise above it, but I would find that a little bit upsetting. But I think, this is what is so lovely from middle age onwards. I think you do stop. Well, I certainly stop trying to fit in and look a certain way and behave a certain way.
Yeah, no, I'm completely with you. If I think veer in that direction and I do try, I just end up disappointed because it's never going to happen. So you've just got to be happy with what you see in front of you. Doesn't matter about anything else.
But given the whole Trini and Susanna days, do people always look with interest at what you're wearing and try to see, is she a sort of fashion icon for all women? Because I would find that quite disconcerting.
To be honest, Jacqueline, now, if I walk down the street, let's say I'm kind of in a local town, and I'm walking down the street and someone might recognise me and I'm with my, daughters or something, and they'll look, and I know what's going through their minds. They'll look and they'll go, oh, is that Susanna from Trini and Susanna? And then their next thought is, no, it can't possibly be, because I look like shit most of the time. And I couldn't care less, because for me, it's all about feeling. And it sounds such a kind of, you know, cliche to say this, but it is. It's about feeling healthy and my insides being beautiful and well looked after. And I'm not talking about my personality and being a good person. I'm literally talking about not waking up in the morning and heart, you know, having to crawl out of bed because my joints are aching so much. Yeah. You know, that's my priority now.
Yeah, very wise. Very wise.
Thank God.
I do remember when I lived at the hostel and we were all having a kind of midnight feast, like something out of Enid Blyton, and we were all saying, what would we wish for the future if we could have anything at all? And we all had very bizarre wishes. But one girl said, good health. And we all looked at her thinking, God, how boring. And yet, as you get older, actually good health is very important indeed. And if you are feeling absolutely dreadful or really worried about a particular thing, you know, it does help to lead a healthy life. Although sadly there are some things, no matter how virtuous you are, they jump up at you and fell you just like that.
Well, you've been through a lot, haven't you, health-wise?
Well, I have been. I mean, I sort of... things, my organs failed. The one that still seems to be pumping away okay is my liver, and I do give that a bit of a punishment sometimes. But the heart went, and then the kidneys went. But thank God for modern medicine, because now, I mean, fingers crossed, you know, the heart's been back in action now. I have a brand new kidney, mostly courtesy of Trish, because although we're not compatible, there's a wonderful scheme where you can do a swap with another couple. And so she donated her kidney. So we've now both just got one working kidney, but mostly you don't even think about it.
So when what did you wear? Are you married, you and Trish?
We've civilly partnered.
Civilly partnered. So do you remember what you wore when you were civilly partnered?
I did wear a ghost outfit. It was a kind of rosy, I have to say rosy fawn colour. A top and a dress sort of just below the knee. And I've still got it, I'm very fond of it. And Trish wore a sort of rather elegant Chinese brocade longish jacket and black trousers. So we were certainly not going to be wearing white frocks or anything like that.
No. And have you ever had a wardrobe malfunction, Jacqueline?
I have. Ages ago, there was a fashion for wraparound skirts, and I had treated myself to a designer black wraparound skirt down to about the ankle. Very flimsy material, but very flattering. It didn't bulk around the tummy or the hips or anything, and it had this nice sort of belt that you could knot. And therefore, you had, as I wore it in the shop, just a reasonably decent little display of leg, just a slit up to about the knee. And I thought, yeah, that's fine. And I was thrilled to bits with it. And then the first time I wore it out, walking down the road and then another road, I realised that as I walked, the split got a little more sort of showing things, not really past about lower thigh, but even so, I was a little bit disconcerted there. And when I got into the town, I was looking in shop windows and kept looking at it and thinking, oh God. And I suppose I was absentmindedly hitching at it to try and stop it gaping so much. When suddenly the belt of it, the tie round belt, undid itself and the whole blisker fell past my knees, around my ankles, which in crowded shopping street. So Oh, dear God. I can feel myself blushing at the thought of it. So I went into the nearest shop doorway. There was nothing else for it. Turned my back on people and sort of pulled the skirt back past my knickers, tied the knot up about 60 times, and then went straight home by the back street. And I never wore the damn skirt again. It was just so awful. It was just like those nightmares you get. So not a good look at all.
Not a good look. Not a good look. And I imagine I know the answer to this already, Jacqueline, but what would you consider to be your comfort blankets? Something can be anything from a laptop to a notepad to a lamp to a piece of clothing. What gives you great comfort?
Well, for wearing, it's my jewellery. For if I go out anywhere, I generally have a book with me, which is very annoying if I'm in the middle of a great big hardback at home, say, but then I will take a paperback, or I have to have something to read, because even if I'm waiting 10 minutes for a bus or whatever, I need something to distract myself. Mm-hmm. So as long as I got a book to read, and as long, I mean, I used to keep my jewellery on all the time, particularly the bangles, because I just liked the sound of them, even in bed when I rolled over. But I have a specific bangle that has got little hooks on it. I've got it here.
Oh, let's see.
And there we go.
Oh, it's this. Stunning.
And it's got a sort of moonstone, and it's quite chunky silver. And then it's got little skulls with kind of like little hooked horns. It's quite little. It's not too sort of biker girl. But I particularly was fond of this bangle and always wore it at night. And then one night I woke up with the most excruciating pain, and the little horny bit had actually impaled itself in my nipple. And in the dark, I couldn't actually get it out. And so I had to hobble. My cheeks absolutely streaming with tears of pain into the bathroom. And then I had to crouch and try and unhook it. And I have never experienced so much pain. So that people who have rings hanging out their nipples must be mad, though I was mad to wear the damn thing. And needless to say, I don't wear any jewellery whatsoever in bed.
Oh, my God, I'm clutching onto my bosoms at the
I know, it makes you
it.
Do that. It was absolutely, desperately painful.
Oh, my God, Jacqueline. But have you... have you always worn silver jewellery? Because you look at your rings now and it's all silver.
I did used to wear gold when I could afford it. Often when a new book came out, I would buy a new gold ring or something. You kind of look even more flamboyant wearing a lot of gold. And then my hair went silvery grey very early on. And so I thought it might look just slightly more refined if I wore silver, and I wore glasses, silver glasses, silver hair, so that was much easier. And I prefer this sort of jewellery because it's, I mean, the stones I love, but they're not really precious stones, and silver isn't anywhere near as expensive as gold. So I can occasionally treat myself to something new and chunky, and it's lovely to wear.
I love that ring you're wearing on your right hand. Is it on your right
this
hand?
This one.
Yes,
this one.
Stunning.
Yes.
Great. And actually, silver suits you. Silver is better colour for you than gold.
I think so. And I'd also be a bit frightened that, you know, somebody might, if I went around clanking with gold, they might try and rip off my fingers or something.
Could very likely happen. You've been honoured with so many awards, and then obviously with your damehood. So what would you consider to be your birthday suit, an outfit that is like pizzazz?
There's a green silk dress that I got from Zittig and Voltaire ages ago, and that's the one. That's my sort of dress that will take me anywhere. And even if I'm going through, you know, the way that even if you had just put on a few pounds, but you suddenly imagine yourself absolutely huge or whatever, but it's relatively loose around the waist and the tummy. So I don't put it on and think, oh God. I like it. I like the feel of it. And I had to go to the palace once because I think Women's Art was doing a Woman of the Year awards thing. And I didn't want to look too like wearing my funeral black suit, which was the only really posh thing. So the green silk dress went beautifully there. I was astonished to be awarded a special BAFTA for a sort of lifetime children's in the media thing, because a lot of my books have been adapted for television and Tracy Beaker and spin-offs from it have been long running. And that was such a wonderful moment. And I thought, shall I buy a new dress? But I didn't like anything as much as the green silk dress. So I wore it there. And it's even been in a film because do you remember the cat named Bob?
No. Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do. Absolutely. I love that. Yes.
James was a sort of busker on the streets, yes. And then he adopted this cat. And then there was a book about it and some other books and everything. And he happens to be published by my publishers. And there was a big party held at Christmas or something. And he was there with the cat draped round his shoulders. And I love cats, and yet I'm astonished that this cat is so calm, because, you know, my cat would shriek with horror and run away in a huge, crowded, noisy place. So I went up to him and asked if I could possibly, you know, stroke the cat. And he was just lovely, and Bob was just like he'd been a star all his life and just very happy to be stroked by eager people. And then we both left quite early, and he said his girlfriend was picking him up and she had read my books when she was younger and could they have a photo? So we had a photo. I didn't realise that in actual fact they put it on social media or whatever, because I don't really follow very much at all. And then in the second book about Bob, they had actually mentioned me by name in the book. And so there was a first film about Bob. The second film, somebody approached me and said, would you like to play yourself? Because we're going to have the publishing party. And I said, well, yes, please. And I thought it would be fun. And it was fun in a way, because I did get to meet the real James and also the actor who played him. And although Bob had been in almost semi-retirement then, I got to meet Bob himself. He was getting on a bit. And I got to meet about five understudy Bobs. And I wore my green dress. And I thought that, because it was a publishing party, you see, that my bit was in. And I thought that might give me confidence. Unfortunately, having watched the film, which is very good film, through my fingers. Dear God, I am no actress, even when I'm acting myself. It's one of those cringe moments. So lovely film, lovely person impersonating James, lovely Bob and all his understudies, absolute rubbish me. But luckily, I was only in it for about 2 minutes, and that was that.
How fantastic. And I just want to ask you selfishly one last question. What are you reading? Have you got any good book recommendations? Because I'm sort of running, I mean, you can never run out of books, but what kind of things do you like to read?
I'm just at the moment reading, it's an American book called American Baby, because it's about in the 60s, so many young women, if they got pregnant, they were absolutely practically forced into having their babies put up for adoption if they weren't married or didn't have a boyfriend on the scene and their parents wouldn't look after them. And I am writing something similar about a girl here in the 1960s. And so that is absolutely fascinating. So that's my kind of workbook. Mm-hmm. I recently ploughed through a wonderful biography of Sylvia Plath, which is not uplifting reading, but tells you more than you ever thought was possible about her. But it did, I think it was a terrible time for her all the way through her life, really. But still, she's an absolutely extraordinary poet. And The Bell Jar remains one of my absolute favourite books. So I've read that. I sort of jump around with different books that I've got Shuggy Bain. I think it won the Booker Prize because it's about a boy and his mum in Glasgow in sort of leading a very impoverished life, which sort of appeals to me. I've recently read a Rose Tremaine. So it's very eclectic reading. Yeah.
I'm reading at the moment, which I'm loving, Born to Run, it's about this tribe in Mexico, and basically who they exist, and no one knew anything about them, and it's by Christopher McLaughlin, I think his name is, and it is fascinating because I'm obsessed with not doing it myself, I hasten to add, but ultra running is something I've gone off on a tangent, and it's so interesting about this tribe and how they live and how they can run for 4 days on the trot. So I'm reading that. I really recommend it. It's fantastic.
And it'd be very inspirational for any woman thinking, well, I really ought to start training, doing some running. Not me, though. No.
Or it'll put you off completely. Yeah. But, Jacqueline, you are just fantastic. And thank you so, so much for taking the time to speak to me. And I wish you all the best for your new book, The Runaway Girls, and with all the fantastic books you're yet to write. You're amazing. Thank you.
Bless you, Susanna. I'm going to go and look for your books now and read them.
Oh, I send you the biggest kiss and have a great weekend.
Kisses from me too. You too.
Thank you.
To you too. Bye.
Oh, thanks, Jacqueline. Isn't she just fabulous? Her new book, The Runaway Girls, is out now. Right, before we go, a tiny bit of housekeeping. First, if you have a clothing story of your own or just want to say hi, email us at help@mywardmal.com. Second, you can find our dazzling house band duo at duoguitarmusic.com or at duoguitarmusic on their socials. Finally, you can find us at mywardmal.com. Follow us at mywardmal on our socials and rate and review us on your chosen podcast platform. That's it. Thanks so much again to the wonderful, divine, gorgeous, utterly exquisite Jacqueline, to Duo, and of course, thanks to you for listening. Catch up soon. Until then, my wardrobe is officially closed.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.